Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is TF2 and Mike, and before we get to the myths of Etheria here inside Powers of Grayskull series, just want to let everybody know, through the end of the year, the show is going to run bi-weekly. It's going to run every 2 weeks. So, episode 48 is out now, as you'll be hearing here soon in this episode, and then episode 49 will be 2 weeks from then, and so on and so forth. It's just till the end of the year, so we can get the last four releases for the year, or the last five releases for the year, out to you all before Christmas. After that, Kevin and I are going to go on a pre-production binge, and we are going to get as many episodes as we can get recorded. So, for the honor of Grayskull, here's episode 48 of Myths of Etheria.
Twin sister and defender of the Crystal Castle. This is Spirit, my beloved steed. Fabulous secrets were revealed to me the day I held aloft my sword and said, "For the honor of Grayskull!" A few others share this secret. Among them are Lighthope, Madame Raz, and Cowl. Together, we and my friends of the Great Rebellion strive to free Etheria from the evil forces of Horda!
Hello, this is TF2 and Mike, and welcome to the 48th chapter in the Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise is none other than Optimus Solo himself. Hello.
This feels weird.
Shut up. Are you ready for the Powers of Grayskull, Red Knight?
I'm sorry, what?
Red Knight.
Don't ever call me that again.
Okay, you don't want to be the mysterious hero?
No.
Okay, fine then, don't. Alright, whatever. In... we have anything else to bring up before we get into the show?
Mm.
Oh, actually, we do. We should probably go over the little intricacies here now, since we're actually starting the show proper with actual new episodes, not just Secret of the Sword stuff. So basically, this is going to break down like Tales of Eternia broke down. Kevin's going to read the plot of each episode. He's going to do the Horde members, the members of the Rebellion, all that stuff. We'll have general thoughts on the plot. For the positive moments, we're going to do Whispering Woods moments. And for the negative moments, we're going to have Fright Zone moments. And then we'll do the PSA and all that crap. And then we'll rate the episode. So that's how it's going to go each time.
The only difference for those that are diehard listeners or are fans out there from Tales of Eternia to Myths of Etheria is we're just taking one less break. So basically the first section will be still the same with the intro and all the facts and the historical information and just kind of the general summary. And then we're just combining the good and the bad moments together into one segment. So one less break for you guys, but that way we can kind of transition good and bad right, with each other.
One less break for me in the editing. Cause it took me, when I was editing Tales of Eternia, it took me anywhere from 7 to 8 hours to edit one episode.
That, and because he's constantly distracted by...
No. Don't even.
So that's the only difference for those that have been listening to us for a long time. Otherwise, the show will basically be the same. We're still ranking things. We're still handing out some awards at the end of each episode. So.
Oh, yeah. You want to tell them what the awards are? And the
Yeah.
The,
I mean, the, I had to be creative with this one, obviously. We can't do Power Swords and Havoc Staffs anymore because we're not talking about those characters, just like we couldn't talk about Castle Grayskull moments and Snake Mountain moments. Like you said, we're doing Whispering Woods and Fright Zone moments for the good and the bad. And then for the awards, we're giving out either Protection Swords, because that's what it is this time, or Horde Bats. And that... makes sense.
I think I almost want to give out Destructo Tanks.
And then for our ratings, I know for Tales of Eternia, we were doing Battle Cats and Orcos and this, that, and the other, but it's all going to be one rating system for the Myths of Etheria, and we're rating each episode on a 1 through 5 scale, and that is how many crystal castles we give it. So
0 through 5, but yeah.
Well, yeah, there occasionally there are zeros, but 0 through 5 crystal castles for each episode. So that's the business is out of the way, so you guys can follow along and not be thrown off as we go through.
Absolutely. In this episode of Myths of Etheria, we'll be giving you our thoughts on Episode 6, The Seahawk, Episode 7, The Red Knight, Episode 8, The Missing Axe, and Episode 9, The Prisoners of Beast Island. So we hope you're ready, because it's time to enter Etheria.
Don't you love the smell of the sea, Swifty?
I prefer the smell of oats.
Let me guess, you're hungry.
However did you know?
Well, the town of Seaworthy's not far. We can stop there. They need our help. Dive, Swifty!
Whoa, what happened?
It's She-Ra! She saved us!
Wow! Thanks, She-Ra.
Yeah, thanks a lot!
Tell your whole crew to hang on tight. I'll swim you all to Seaworthy.
First up is The Seahawk. Take it away, sir.
All right, Episode 6, The Seahawk. Air date of September 16th, 1985. Written by Michael Chase Walker, and the plot synopsis goes a little something like this. When investigating a large vessel that frightened the elves of Seaworthy, Adora encounters a pirate called Seahawk, who is stealing from the elves' storehouses and delivering the plunder to the Horde. She tries to convince him to turn from the Horde, but when Catra and several Hordesmen arrive to collect their pay, they make Seahawk command his men to capture Adora. In this episode, the Horde members include Hordak, Catra, Grizzlor, and of course the Horde troopers. And the members of the rebellion we see are simply She-Ra / Princess Adora and her horse Swiftwind. As far as other characters, we do see Seahawk, Swen, some ship's mates, some sea elves, and Mayor Guppy. So what was your kind of overall take on this first proper episode after the five-part movie / episodes? We enter in here with a separate episode, The Seahawk, and what were your thoughts?
Okay, confession time, people. A couple of years ago, there was it's still a channel on TV somewhere. There's a channel called Kubo. I don't know if anybody has this anywhere else in the U.S., but here in Kentucky, there was a cable channel called Kubo on Time Warner. It was 340 or whatever the hell it was. And at the time, they were actually showing He-Man and She-Ra episodes on television.
Right.
To my knowledge, that hasn't been done in the U.S. anyway in 30 years, at least. I think this was around 2012, 2013, right around the 30th anniversary of He-Man. So I had seen this a couple of times a few years ago. Until I watched it for this episode of the podcast, I couldn't remember crap about it other than, you know, hey, here's a Han Solo. Han Solo wannabe, kind of. When I went back and watched this, I liked it. I thought the voice acting for Seahawk was pretty cool. I don't think it was Bo. I don't think it was the same voice actor that did Bo. I could be wrong, but
you're
I liked
about
his voice.
Actual voice of Seahawk?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I believe it was...
DeCenzo?
Yeah, it was George DeCenzo, the same guy who voiced Sparta.
Okay. I like DeCenzo's non-Hordak voice. Don't get me wrong, I like his Hordak voice, but when he's doing other voices other than Hordak's, I really enjoy that. I think the character of Seahawk, again, there are a lot of parallels here for Star Wars, specifically with Seahawk to Han Solo. I mean, you know, if Han shot first, so did Seahawk.
We almost have to make it a theme or a segment in each episode. We'll have our Star Wars moment in each episode.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a whole lot of them, I think, if we were keeping a tally.
Yeah. I like the episode. I thought the plot was very well structured. I thought the motivations and, you know, the Seahawk is essentially this guy that, you know, is basically out for himself and his crew and nobody else, and everybody else be damned, and he thinks he has to work for the Horde forever, and blah, blah, blah.
Then he
blah.
Shows up in the Millennium Falcon and saves the day.
Yeah, exactly.
God, I cannot do a Chewie to save my life. A buddy of mine, Dustin Van Cor, he did a little joke a few years ago. I have the clip of it. He said something. He said, stroke the Wookiee, and then he made a really awesome Chewbacca noise. Like, I swear, it was almost like Peter Mayhew. So the Seahawk thing, what I like here is how both She-Ra and Adora are approaching the situation and approaching the problem and actually looking for the good in him. I thought that was in, like, she's not just out to, like, because this show has a, at least as far as I know, has a very dubious reputation of belittling the men to show off the fact that the women are powerful. At least that's what I've seen people say in the past, and that's what I've thought in the past. That's what I used to think as a teenager. Because again, like we said in episode 46 and episode 47, neither one of us remember any episodes of this thing from when we were kids. So, but overall, I enjoyed the plot. I thought it was a nice plot. There wasn't too many plot devices that made me utterly cringe and run back to Eternia.
Right. I think my only issue with this one, as far as a plot goes, maybe, is it seemed like somewhat of a abrupt transition from the 5-part movie episodes to regular episodes. It's just not really smooth as far as we don't get a sense of, hey, that happened. We're acknowledging it. And now that we're here, you know, now that we've made the decision to stay on Etheria and wage this war or this battle, I guess you could call it, this is where we're starting, or even just a comment about it or anything. It just was a little jarring for me that it's like, okay, we had that 5-part series and now, boom, we're just in this random place, random episode. It's just Adora / She-Ra. There's no connection to anybody else. So it was just a little of a weird transition. And it, as a viewer, I was like, what's going on? Why is there no connection? I'm not looking for continuity necessarily. I'm not saying they have to continue the story.
You're just looking for something to...
to be like, hey, we're starting off here. Or this is the first thing that's happening and then we can go on from here or whatever.
I think what you needed at the beginning of this episode, instead of opening up where we opened, is you needed something opening up on the Fright Zone and having Hordak not necessarily be melancholy about his losing the battle, but, you know, he still has... You needed a little bit of a buffer between... Instead of just throwing us right into...
It would have even been as easy as just giving Adora one line or two lines at the beginning to just say, like, something like, oh, it's going to be a... you know, I don't know, like, interesting journey or some, you know, some type of comment would have just been fine, just to connect it all. But it was just, it took me a few minutes to, like, get my bearings on where we were at and what's going on now. But other than that, as far as the actual story goes, I mean, I think it's fine. Of course, I'm a big Star Wars fan, and Han Solo is one of my favorite characters, hence my Optimus Solo name. So I'm not going to hate any type of similar storyline, no matter how much it's a complete ripoff of Star Wars. So, yeah, no problem with the plot.
Yeah, I don't think I have a problem with the plot, but I have a problem with a few plot devices.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this earlier that I didn't, but I did. It's not necessarily plot devices, it's more of how they, like, there were a couple of scenes where, and maybe I should save this for the Fright Zone moments, but there were a couple of weird scenes for me. Maybe I didn't see it right, but with the ship, and I'll talk about those later, because it was just weird. Shall we head to Whispering Woods?
Yeah, let's make our first trip there.
A monster that flies and then swims. I think the sea elves were a bit excited, don't you?
They are little people with big imaginations.
True, Swifty. Then again, one never... Wait a minute. Look! There's some kind of vessel hidden away down there. That must be the monster that the elves were talking about. Let's have a close look. It's the strangest ship I've ever seen. Look at those masts, Swifty. Uh-oh. Pirates.
Here, take this.
They're robbing one of the elves' storehouses. How strange. I sense a feeling of sadness in that one. I think I'd better do something about these pirates, but I'll do it as Adora. Come on, Swifty. Be very quiet, Spirit.
Let me go!
Who are you?
I might well ask the same of you, lady. And what brings you to spy on us?
Well, what makes you think I was spying? You know, I could be lost.
No. You look too smart to be lost and too beautiful to be an elf.
I'm also too big. Now then, could you tell me where Seaworthy is?
Seaworthy? Yes, I know where it is. We're going right by there. We can take you there.
What? Swen, we're not running a ferry service. Let her find her own way.
It'll be all right, Captain. She'll be no trouble. I'll see to it.
You sympathetic fool. Well, so be it. But we must first deliver the supplies to Horde Harbor.
Man, this mist in the Whispering Woods. Can't somebody clear this out? Who the hell lit the cigarette? Ugh.
It's gonna take some getting used to.
Yeah.
I gotta say...
Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I like the Whispering Woods. It's a cool-sounding place. I have nothing against it yet. I'm not tired of it. It's new atmosphere, new environment. So I gotta say, one of the things I liked about this episode was similar things at the beginning of He-Man was the fact that people know who She-Ra is and that Adora and the Rebellion both have a reputation throughout this area. So it's not just the Horde members or the people of the Rebellion that are referring to each other. The casual people and, you know, citizens and just bystanders are aware that these things exist. So it adds to the scope of how big this thing is.
So let me ask you, now that you've said that, do you think that 6 months, a year, some time has passed between the end of the events of Secret of the Sword and...
See, that's the other thing that's kind of a question mark, because it's weird that they would all know so fast if it was something that was like, the next day, this happened. So, I mean, I would think there'd be some time that's passed that we can kind of just assume, whether it's weeks or months, it's hard to say. I mean, they would have already known that the Rebellion existed prior to the
events. Right.
And they would have already known that Adora existed, but the combination... that Adora is now a wanted individual, you know, that she's like the Empire's most wanted, and that she is a friend of the Rebellion, that it should be fairly newer news. So,
because if you remember in Secret of the Sword, Glimmer says, or Cowl says, you know, it's a very small rebellion right now, Cringer, but it's, you know, we're growing, right. So maybe, you know.
But they don't ever refer to her as Force Captain Adora or...
Well, they're not supposed to.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, it's not like some of them don't know yet.
Right.
So I just kind of like that there is differing levels of knowledge of what's going on there. Obviously, it's not... this is not a Fright Zone moment, because I'm not saying it's bad. But this show is, at this point, so much a ripoff of Star Wars that we're literally even calling the two factions the Empire and the Rebellion.
Yeah.
Like, we're not even trying to mask it. And then, if that's not obvious enough, we have a lightsaber in this episode.
Yep.
There's literally a weapon that is almost identical to a lightsaber. And then, of course, we have the character of Seahawk showing up, who, in a way, is Han Solo. I'd like to think of it a little different here. I think it's Han Solo meets Shipwreck from G.I. Joe.
Oh, okay.
Because I think there's a little bit... I mean, obviously, Shipwreck has a lot of Han Solo traits, too. But I just get that. Like, if you took the Shipwreck character from G.I. Joe and then crossed it with Han Solo, I think Seahawk is who you get. And I really like that character. I like the design. I like the voice, like you were talking about. I like how it's drawn and colored, etc. So, I mean, I enjoyed that character and the combination of kind of Han Solo Shipwreck that I got from it. My favorite line so far in the series comes right here in this first episode. Oil me in butter and call me a flounder. That was said, folks. That was said in this episode. I don't know who wrote that, but that made me chuckle because I had no idea. I think it came from She-Ra, too. It came from She-Ra or Adora, and it was just weird. And then my last Whispering Woods moment would be the end song of the episode. I know that's going to be something that we hear every end of every episode, but it just reminds me so much of the movie and some of the epic musical tracks that are involved.
You mean the I Have the Power
the closing theme credit the... song. It's just fantastic. I do not get tired of that. And we'll see in 20 episodes if I'm tired of it, but right now I love it. What about you?
Orko grew a beard and is now the mayor. Whoa, this is really a different dimension.
It's weird hearing Orko's voice in all these different characters. It's like, well, Orko's not here, so we can use that voice. Well, maybe not.
You already mentioned Han. I do love seeing more than 10 seconds of Catra. Because, I mean, really, how many times, like, in the movie and even in the episodic version of The Sword of She-Ra, Catra didn't really have, like, she had, you know, two or three moments. You know, we saw the cat suit, quite literally. And then we saw her turn into a cat and her and Battle Cat had a love spat and all that. But, I mean, that scene in Secret of the Sword is like 10, 20 seconds or less until her mask gets, you know, turned off or cut off or whatever. So I love seeing more than 10 seconds of Catra. I think the voice, I don't know if it's because she has more lines here, but it's going to get me, and I'm not being negative about this, I'm just pointing this out while I'm talking about her. It's going to take me a little bit to get used to her voice, because in The Secret of the Sword, as I said, she has some lines, but she doesn't have many. So hearing Catra use actual full sentences and talk in full speech, it didn't put me off, but it kind of has me on the fence to whether I'm going to like it or not, because I just need to get used to it. And then, hey, there's Grizzlor. Two lines that I liked out of this one came from She-Ra. Is all that roaring really necessary? Oh, did the poor kitty hurt her head?
Yeah, there's definitely some good lines so far in the series. Some funny moments.
I think, and I really do hate to say this, because, and folks, I've admitted this before in the past 44, 47, however many episodes, whatever. By the time we got to episode 125 of He-Man, I was just so burnt out. And at this point, I'm so pumped up and refreshed for the She-Ra stuff. I almost like Melindy Britt's comebacks and quips and all that stuff more than John Irwin's as He-Man.
I thought you were going to say Skeletor for a second. I'm like, don't you dare go there.
No. He-Man and She-Ra, not She-Ra and Skeletor.
All right.
Fright Zone?
Why not?
All right.
A couple things, and one of them you kind of mentioned already in your Whispering Woods, but I have to talk about Catra's voice.
Okay.
I literally had written down in my notes in the positive section Catra's voice at the beginning of the episode.
You had to erase it.
And then I crossed it off towards later on, and it ended up in the bottom parts of the episode, because this is something that I think might draw on my last nerve by the time we get done with She-Ra. I'm not talking about just Catra. If you think about it, and I'm not going to mention which characters they are because it's going to come up in a couple episodes later today, but there is a lot of characters that they decided when they were doing the voices to have different effects, different sounds, over and over and over and over and over again. And I don't know if it's going to bother me by the end of it, because there's at least three characters that were already introduced to in these first four episodes that all have an effect that they use over and over again, like the Catra meow cat type thing. And Catra for me is the worst one so far. It is, I'm not on the fence. It's grating my nerves. So I'm not a fan of what they're doing with Catra's voice. If it was a little bit more random or a little bit more like few and far between, like they just use it every so often or with certain letters or something, that'd be different, but it's like every third word and it's going to drive me insane.
I mean, as far as I can remember, and this is, again, I'm not really, like you said, there's three, but as far as I can remember, out of the Evil Horde, the only people that have, like, normal non, I don't want to say auto-tune, because it's not what it is, non-affected voices is Hordak, Shadow Weaver and the Horde Troopers. Like, Mantana has some sort of vocal effect. Grizzlor has some sort of vocal effect.
I'm talking about too.
Oh, really?
He does a snort.
Oh, yeah, he does a snort, but, like, his voice
if they continue to add that little snort as often as they're adding the meow and Catra, it'll drive me nuts. I'm crossing my fingers. I know I'm going to be wrong here, but please tell me that we're not going to refer to Swiftwind as Swifty the entire series.
We are.
Oh, my God. Since when did She-Ra, this is my knowledge or my hazy memory of the show, the super senses?
You mean the healing and all that?
Just the super senses as far as being able to hear and see and...
It's part of the healing thing. It goes back to Secret of the Sword, where He-Man was like, oh, I wish we asked the Sorceress more about your powers.
Okay, gotcha. That just feels like that's going to be something that they use whenever they need anything. They're just going to be like, okay, we'll use her super senses.
Yeah, that's probably what they're going to do. No. Another thing they're going to do that I'll bring up later that absolutely I despise is something with some shape-shifting, but we'll talk about that later.
I could deal with, and this is another thing that I should be keeping track of. We should almost be doing a photo album of this for our calendar for She-Ra, and that would be every different type of vehicle or machine that becomes Hordak. Because in this one we get...
we would have way too many pictures. That would be like a 96-month calendar.
In this one we get the Horde blimp. Now, I didn't stutter,
wait,
guys.
Wait. Did he actually turn into that?
No, I'm just talking about anything that has like his shape or...
Oh, has his face on it. Okay.
Are we serious here with the Horde blimp? Like, do people put blimps in action cartoons?
Why do people put blimps on adventure movies? It's because they got to find some way to get to Nazi Germany and get that damn book back.
And then I got a couple nitpicks and then just one thing that made me kind of raise my eyebrows. One might be the same thing that you're talking about, but the ship-on-ship animation, looked terrible. That looked absolutely terrible when they were doing like the faraway shot and it was like the ship and the ship. It was not, that was bad.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
I know we've talked about this many times in the He-Man series, and it's probably going to be a recurring theme here as well. But how in God's name do you explain the transformation on the ship in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I have a I think it's in a later episode that I have a problem with the transformation, but
she's on a ship in the middle of a body of water. Where the hell does she recover?
Oh, okay, wait.
And then we're just like,
hold on.
Princess Adora is fine.
Yeah, hold on, but she's on the ship. She's on a physical boat, okay? She's actually moving on the sea. Unlike Adam, who is just standing there in the water and pulls out the sword.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like, how are you, if you're on a ship with Adora, how are you going to explain how She-Ra's there all of a sudden?
That's true. The explanation is kind
of... And then my even better here, I don't know how you explain this one. In Etheria, do all ships come equipped with jail cells? Because that ship had like built in like 6 jail cells.
That was a Horde ship. That wasn't a... Yeah, that was a special... I'm trying to be able to explain this. That was the Horde prison transport.
It was a prison transport?
Yeah, okay. So that's gonna have jail cells.
Okay, at first I'm just now, like,
if you're just talking about like a ship like what Seahawk has, most likely probably not.
I didn't realize it was a prison transport. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm like, why does this ship have jail cells? All right, what about you? What bothered you in this episode?
All right, the ship stuff. Let's get that out of the way. Because the other one, I only actually have one other one.
Nice.
And it's just a nitpick. It's just an overall nitpick. The ship, the Seahawk ship, okay? So we see it, and we've seen a flying ship before. Because... Madame Raz did it with, you know, going to Beast Island and Secret of the Sword. It weirded me out seeing the ship flying and then seeing it in the water and then seeing it flying again, because at first I thought I was seeing it actually move through the water on the water, when I was like, no, wait, rewind. Oh, crap. It's not in the water. It's actually flying again. What the hell? It's just the animation on the ship and how Etheria has flying. Like, I just don't think a boat should be able to grow wings and fly.
I agree.
And the other one, again, this is a super, super heavy nitpick on my part, and it's something we've mentioned in many of our other review shows. It's something we've mentioned in Tooncast Classic, and I'm gonna reference Mask Mayhem here. So just like in Mask, it always bugs me a bit seeing the Horde emblem everywhere, like on the side of the blimp. Did Leech go out there and paint that thing on there, or how the hell did they get that like that? Like, and I know that's a super nitpick for me, but I mean, that's pretty much all I got.
No, that's something that I'm going to bring up in a later episode too. So, as far as the PSA, it was all about looking for the good in people. And my question is, before you get on your little rant, you know, tangent on Loki or however we're supposed to say this guy's name, did you spot him?
I don't want to spot him. I want to light him on fire.
I'm
going to
ask you every episode if you spotted him.
I don't want to. I'm not even going to look. So you don't even have to ask. I believe it's Loki. It's supposed to be L-O-O-K-E-E.
Right.
I don't know, whatever.
I did not spot him. I didn't see him. I was blind to that, apparently. I did not spot him. But
He
doesn't bother me at all.
His voice—it's his voice that bothers me.
I don't mind
me.
His voice.
I would rather have.
I'd rather listen to his voice than Contra's.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, okay. I think I got this right. I would rather have a million episodes of mathematical space lessons with Bluegrass and Copper Kid. And friggin' Luke.
Well, I would too, because they're awesome, but I'm going to tell Erica Scheimer about your distaste for it, because I think it's pretty good.
I just wish they would have used, like they did in He-Man, I wish they would have used multiple characters to give the PSA.
It is a cool angle, though, as far as spotting him during the episodes. Like, I'm already having fun trying to do that. I'm completely failing.
Yeah.
But I'm having fun.
I'm not even trying, people.
Come on,
I'm just
join the fun, you crotchety old man.
No, I refuse to. You can't make me, you damn kids. Get off my lawn.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to take... I assume we're taking a break here to go for the awards, right?
Is that, is that what it says?
Hello?
Yes.
I don't know.
You jackass.
All right, let's get to the awards after this.
Come in! Oh, Hordak! This is... Catra!
Yes, Catra, what is it?
I have good news, Hordak. I've captured a Dora.
Adora! Wonderful! Very good work, Catra! Bring her to me! I have much to ask of that rebel traitor! And be sure to tell her I can hardly wait to see her! And I have her dungeon all picked out!
I will! Oh, and Hordak! I will expect a big reward for this one.
That is our policy. Rewards for success, punishment for failure. But do not fail, Catra.
I won't. Catra out. Well, it won't be long before I get my reward.
We're still partners, right?
We were never partners.
Why, you cheer? We agreed 50-50, aren't
we? Red alert. Unidentified ship in area.
That's funny. I don't see anything. It must be a false alarm.
It's awards time. This is where you're supposed to talk.
I thought you were doing it all. I'm so confused. All right. Yeah, we're giving out some awards for the first time in the Myths of Etheria. And like we said at the opening, we give out Horde Bats and protection swords. Do you have any horde bats to hand out?
I don't want to do it just because to start this off, but I'm still probably going to do it just because Luki gets a horde bat. I can't stand that damn character.
You damn idiot.
What about you?
I have no horde bats. I only have a protection sword, and that will go to Seahawk because I thought he was a cool character. I like the combination Han Solo and Shipwreck, so I would love to see him appear in some more episodes. What about you? Anything good protection sword wise to hand out?
I'll give one to Seahawk. I liked how he finally came around and saw the error of his ways, and I liked his interactions with She-Ra. I'm also going to give a sort of protection to She-Ra and Catra for their interactions with each other.
That is a lot of swords you're giving out, sir.
Well, it's three.
That's a lot.
It's three. It's not that.
You're running out of swords by the end of the series, sir. You only have so many.
Right. No. We have unlimited swords here. I love their interaction, the banter back and forth between the two characters. As much as we may be still skeptical, well, I'm still skeptical and you're pretty much in the negative on Catra's voice. As far as how she interacts with She-Ra and the whole female villain thing, I really did dig that. So they both get power sword, or protection. So, swords of protection, damn it. It's going to get it. It's, folks, this is our first episode outside of what we've known for our whole lives, so it's going to take me a while to get used to this crap.
Rating, sir? How many crystal castles do you give this one?
I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Well, that's fair enough, and I'm just a slight notch ahead of you at 4 out of 5.
All right, let's get to the next episode after this.
This place sure gives me the creeps.
Bo always takes us to the nicest places.
1,000 pardons for the inconvenience, but this is truly the shortest road to Blackmoor Castle and the Rebels' Fair. You don't want to be late, do you?
Only a fool would go sloshing through this swamp for a city fair.
How would you like to be the main dish at dinner tonight?
Not funny.
Cowl, you have no sense of humor.
I only laugh at funny things. Now that's funny.
You're right, and the joke is on me.
Bo, look out! Look out!
It's Leech!
No problem. I'll just throw a little light on an ugly subject.
That's so fast, Glimmer Girl. Try one of my stun beams on for size.
Can't move.
Surrender.
You've got to be joking.
You know, if you keep crossing your eyes like that, you'll get a terrible headache.
Maybe you'd do better if I stood still.
Gotcha.
There's no one to save you now.
Unhand that woman, villain.
Great jumping Argonauts.
Release her, or face the Red Knight.
Fight this, you oversized tin can.
Great shot!
Up next is Episode 7, The Red Knight. Take it away.
All right, like I said, Episode 7, The Red Knight, air date of September 17th, 1985, written by Mike Chane. A mysterious hero called the Red Knight rescues the rebels from the Horde as they journey to a fair at Blackmoor Castle. At the fair, the Red Knight defends Blackmoor Castle from the Horde, who is determined to capture Queen Angela. Horde members, we have Hordak, Scorpia, Imp, Mantenna, and more Horde troopers. Members of the Rebellion, we have She-Ra, Bo, Glimmer, Queen Angela, and Cowl. And as far as other characters, obviously we have the Red Knight, a girl, a boy, some Blackmoor villagers, and some random other race audience members, etc. So as far as the Red Knight goes, we've already seen the Seahawk, now we're on to the Red Knight. What do you think about this mysterious episode?
I think he's the king.
King Angela?
I'm just gonna... I don't know if that would be his name, but I think because Queen Angela keeps going on and on and on this whole episode about, where have I seen you before? Your voice sounds so familiar. You know, it's like, it has to be some, it's either the king or it's Glimmer's father or it's whomever. It's something to do with the Angela family between her and Glimmer. That's the only thing I can think of.
I mean, it's possible. I didn't even know there was a king, but yeah, I'd buy that. But what do you think of, as far as the dynamics of somebody that we don't know who it is and the interactions between him and the rest of them, etc.?
I liked it. I thought it was good. Mainly what the reason why I like the character is the voice. I like the voice acting for him. And, you know, he's... The Red Knight is one of those voices that I've never... it's a heroic voice, and it's a really good voice, but it's something unlike we've ever heard in the past 45 episodes, like, all the He-Man stuff. Like, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure I know the voice actor. It's probably DiCenzo, or it's probably one of the... Yeah, so... But DiCenzo wasn't ever really in He-Man that much. He was in it a couple of times, but...
Right.
Again, like I said last episode with Seahawk, I like the way that DiCenzo's other non-Hordak voices are playing, and this is just another one that I really enjoy.
For sure.
What about you? Any other general thoughts on the plot and anything?
I mean, I like the idea of a character that we don't quite know who it is. I'll get into some bad parts about that as well. But, I mean, I like the premise of a mysterious hero and kind of trying to figure out who he is. Can we trust him? Is he good? Is he bad? Etc. Who's he really working for? Where are his real intentions? And you also get the whole chivalry aspects of him and, you know, kind of introducing some elements of that. And it also makes for an interesting episode when you're tying it into the whole rebellion and the Horde. So, I mean, there's nothing about the plot that necessarily takes away from the episode or makes me hate it or anything.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get to Whispering Woods after this.
This fair is truly magnificent.
It's our way of celebrating the start of the rebellion.
Are you gonna win the Rebels' run this year?
Don't be silly! Bo always wins!
I'll try not to disappoint you.
Help! Help!
A runaway wagon!
Like a job for She-Ra.
For the honor of Grayskull.
We have now entered a Whispering Woods, and damn it, somebody please put that cigarette out.
As far as whispering, are you going to say that every time?
Anyways, yep.
No, please don't. As far as
at least for this episode. Okay.
As far as Whispering Woods moments for me, the one character in the series that it doesn't bother me that we have a repetitive effect on his voice, at least up to this point, is Mantenna. I actually like his voice and the effects that they do, and it's not so aggravating or like grating. It's not so loud and obnoxious, and I just think it has a cool sound to it. So I actually do dig Mantenna's voice, so that's a good positive moment for me. Like the mystery behind the Red Knight. My quote from this episode is real simple: brainless boob. I like that. And of course the whole dynamic between Red Knight versus Bo is somewhat intriguing. I mean, it's not all good, but I like that there's two kind of competing characters there.
It's kind of like, I don't want to say, well, remind me to talk about this point when we get to the Fright Zone, because it's going to sound too negative here. For me, first of all, how many times in, and I know we can't help it, folks, we're going to have to compare this to Masters. How many times in Masters of the Universe and He-Man and the Masters of the Universe did we see this many characters this early and this long? We saw Leech, Scorpia, and Mantana all at once in the very beginning of it. I just absolutely love that. I just thought that was great, because you essentially have the whole, almost the whole horde, minus Grizzlore and Shadow Weaver and Hordak, coming right after them.
Right.
Absolutely love, like Skeletor. You need to go back and learn some more from your Sith Lord here, because apparently you didn't learn enough, because you never really sent all your villains. Whatever. The Red Knight saves the day. Enjoy that. And I didn't think Imp was going to show up this early, but I was like, hey, look, it's Imp. And my final one was Hordak's bubble bounced. All I can think of is that bubble boy from Seinfeld. Oh, man. So as we enter the Fright Zone, I just have a few, and I know you've probably got more than I do. Mine are mostly, one is mostly an animation error or a character error. When the hell did Cowl eat as much as Cringer does and gain all that damn weight? I mean, Cringer used to eat tons of stuff, and obviously he's always running for his life because he's essentially the Scooby-Doo of the He-Man universe, because he's always afraid until he gets thrown in the battle cap. But I mean, if you look at Cowl in this episode, he looks like somebody's gonna throw him on the Barbie and grill him up. I mean, he just looks so damn fat. I know it's a stupid little nitpick, but Cowl in the movie and even in the last episode compared to here, it looks like he put on 25 or 30 pounds.
Maybe he's been eating.
Maybe. I can't decide if in this episode, Bo is more whiny than Scott Tracker ever was. So emo. Like, the whole thing with Bo and the Red Knight, it's like the Red Knight is Robin Hood and Bo is a really, really wimpy version of the Sheriff of Nottingham. It just didn't work. Oh, God. Bo. The laser bubble blaster. Really, Hordak? The laser bubble if you're going to shoot a laser at somebody, it should fry their arm off. It shouldn't turn into a damn bubble. I understand it's a kid's show. I understand they can't do weapons all... You know, they're not supposed to do weapons that kill and all that. But, I mean, all as I can think of is... I wonder if Hordak stole this idea from Skeletor, or if Skeletor stole this idea from Hordak. Because if you remember in He-Man, there was an episode where Skeletor was in a zero-G bubble.
True.
I don't know. What do you got?
You already stole most of them. No.
Sorry.
Laser bubble blaster. That's got to be one of the worst, though.
I've not seen any of these series. Thank you.
So that's definitely getting one. Too many references by the Queen about the Knight's voice. Like, I get it. The voice is familiar. You think you might know this character. One mention would have been enough. I think she mentions it 5 times.
Yeah.
So that was disturbing. And her, Angela's voice is, I know I'm on the voice kick, and I'll be like that, I guess, when the first time I hear each character and kind of if I like it or not. But I cannot stand Queen Angela's voice. It just grades on me. So.
It's Erica Scheimer, right?
Queen Angela is, yeah, Erica Scheimer. So you can hate Luki, I hate Queen Angela.
Okay, that's fine. I don't hate Queen Angela's voice, but it depends on how long she talks and how long Erica has to hold that tone or that accent that she's using for it. Because it's some weird, I don't want to say Cockney, because I know it's not a Cockney accent, it's some weird British-sounding, strange thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird is what it is. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the PSA on this one. Once again, I'm 0 for 2 so far. Did not see him. I keep forgetting to look at him, and then at the end I'm like, shit. So I missed him again, but the PSA was all about doing your best. Do your best, folks.
That's right. We're going to take a quick break, come back with the final ratings and all that good stuff after this.
I have no interest in this blue knight, imp, but...
Not blue, red!
That's what I said!
No, you didn't. You said...
The important thing, you nasty little nit, is that you brought me the news that Queen Angela is at the Rebels' Fair at Castle Blackmoor.
What's so important about Blackmoor, Dad?
I'll tell you, you brainless boob. Castle Blackmoor is outside the protection of Brightmoon. Queen Angela will be ours for the taking, and we'll crush the rebellion like this.
It's awards and ranking time. What do you got for Horde Bats?
I got one to hand out, and it's to Bo. This dude is already coming across as a punk bitch.
Yeah. Huh?
So, yeah, I mean, the Red Knight beats him fair and square. Bo goes off and cries about it. And I think he might have a vagina. What about you? Any Horde Bats?
Oh, God. This is so hilarious. So you think Bo might have a vagina?
Yes.
It's so funny you say that. Over on the Gem Show, it was an outtake that we did for one of the comic review episodes we do for IDW's ongoing comic series, Gem and the Holograms. My buddy Nicole Hailstorm, she said, out of all Gem and the Holograms and the Misfits, Rio has the biggest vagina. For me, I got to give one to Bo. I mean, we might as well just bat him over the head, because this guy just needs to stop being so damn emo. I mean, he's over there moping and whining, and I don't see the lesson. I see the lesson that he's taught at the end, but I just don't see what's the point of having him be this whiny little punky Brewster bitch.
Right.
I don't know. What about... Swords of Protection.
Protection Swords, I don't have any on this one. Nobody really stuck out to me yet.
I'll give one to the Red Knight. I like the mysterious hero, and I hope he returns.
I liked him, but I didn't like him. Like, I don't know. Like, I get that he doesn't want to be known and this, that, and the other, but part of it just bugged me, too. He had some of the ways that he was winning that contest were kind of underhanded. So I don't trust him.
Yeah. Ratings, what are you going to give this one?
I will give this one 3.5 crystal castles.
I'll give it a 4.
All right, so we just switched.
Yep, we just switched. All right, now we're going to head to the next episode to find something that's missing.
A great big horde trooper after a poor little scruffer? I don't like that at all. And neither does She-Ra. For the honor of Grayskull!
So Hordak has a zoo. Perhaps you should be in it.
She-Ra!
Can't deal with someone your own size, huh?
We'll see about that. It's about time the Captron was tested out on a rebel. Capture!
Capture, is it? Ah, but first it has to catch me. Looking for somebody? Ah, so you want to dance? My pleasure. Only I'll lead.
Well, don't just stand there. Capture! Capture! No! Not me! Capture her!
Tell Hordak She-Ra said hello. It's about time some of them learned what it's like to be in a cage.
Up next is episode 8, The Missing Axe. Take it away.
All right, The Missing Axe aired September 18th, 1985, written by Philip Castle. Two boys, in order to cover up for losing their father's axe, fabricate a yarn about a thief taking it to the marketplace at Green Thatch. Unfortunately, Bo takes them at their word and determines to travel to Green Thatch, which is under Horde rule, to apprehend the thief. We have Mantenna and some Horde troopers as far as the Horde representation. And for the Rebellion, we have She-Ra, Bo, Madam Raz, Cowl, Sprague, and Sprocker. That sounds like Fraggle Rock. other characters, we have Mark, Thad, and Kyle as like the just regular human characters. So we have our first children episode, Mike, and what were your thoughts about it? Didn't take long.
It's a good thing my desk is too low or I'd be hitting my head on my desk, folks. If the kids in this series are as bad as the kids in He-Man, then oh my god. And Thad, didn't we get rid of him already? I mean, wasn't he I know it's not the same character animation, but it's the same damn name as one of the other characters in He-Man. This one, it just... I understand it's teaching them the importance of telling the truth and being honest and all that and everything else. And the problem here is, and I guess this was meant to be done in the animation, which it was done. The Twiggets and the kids were like a half beat away from each other.
Yeah.
Like the kids couldn't have looked over to the fucking left and saw the damn Twiggets. Seriously.
Yeah, I hear that. My weird thing as far as the plot so far go is it seems to be no rhyme or reason whatsoever as far as which characters for the Rebellion are going to appear and why and stuff like that. Like when we in He-Man, when we had an episode that had Stratos in it, it dealt with the Avian race, I guess you'd call it. You know, when we dealt with Merman, it was because we were dealing with underwater episodes or episodes near water, something like that. And so far with this episode, and I'm not necessarily saying the Horde, I mean, yeah, we got Catcher in the one episode and Scorpion in the other episode, Mantenna in this episode. Not as concerned because it's easier to explain it from the Horde because Hordak could have just sent Minion A, Minion B, Minion C, it doesn't matter, like just sent someone to do something. So I get that, but from the Rebellion standpoint, I need to know, like, why in this episode does She-Ra have Swiftwind and then the episode after that she doesn't? Why is Madam Raz in this episode or Cowl in one episode and not in another one? And it just seems like it's just randomly like drawing from a hat on which Rebellion characters we're going to see. And that's my take so far.
And plus I have to say this now, and I should have said this at the beginning and maybe I should have saved it till the end of the podcast when we do the closing of the show. Who the hell are all these writers? I've never heard of of these people.
So far, that's the case.
Like seriously, She-Ra, the Sword of She-Ra, and Secret, the Sword of She-Ra, the five episodes, and then the movie version of Secret of the Sword, all Larry DiTilio. Every bit of it was to set up the series. Right. And he sets it up perfectly and whatever else, and now we get all these no-names.
But remember, there was a lot of names that we might not have known too much about at the beginning of He-Man that we ended up seeing over and over again that we ended up enjoying. So hopefully we get some of that. But yeah, I have no knowledge of these writers up to this point at all.
And well, yeah, you may have a point there, but at the same time, as we've already stated many times already so far in episode 46, 47, and now, I don't remember She-Ra. As it, like, I remember He-Man as a kid, and over my lifetime at this point, I'm, you know, 35, nearing 36 next year.
Pretty old.
You know, shut the hell up. You know, I know who Paul Dini is. I know who Larry DiTilio is. I know who Bob Forward is. I know who all these people are. You know, but half the people in She-Ra, it's like, hey, guys, this is the backup writing staff. I don't know. I don't know.
They're just doing that girl series. Nobody cared.
Yeah. It'd probably be better if they had a bunch of women writers on instead of a bunch of testosterone-filled males. Anyway... we're going to head to Whispering Woods.
Father?
While you rest, can Thad and I go chop some kindling for you? Is it all right? Oh, we'd love to help out.
Okay, that would be a big help. But take care of my axe. Remember, it's my means of earning a living.
We will. Thanks, Father. Come on.
I'm tired.
Oh, me too. How long have we been working?
I don't know. But I'm going over to the brook and cool off.
I guess it wouldn't hurt to rest a while. And Father's axe will be all right here.
Come on! I'll race you!
Hey, look! It's an axe! Of course it's an axe. Question is, whose axe?
Oh, I don't see anybody around.
Hello? Hello?
Anybody here?
Doesn't look like it belongs to anybody.
Oh, of course it does. Who'd leave such a nice tool alone in the woods? Must be pretty valuable. Hey, I know. We'll take it to Madame Raz. If anybody can find out who it belongs to, Madame can. And we don't want to leave it out in the woods.
All right, we have entered Whispering Woods, and, oh, God, now somebody's smoking a cigar. Ugh. I'm really enjoying how She-Ra uses her powers throughout each episode. I think that's interesting. I still wish there was a little bit more explanation behind them, but I do like that. I'm not too sure if Bo in disguise is a good thing. I mean, I like seeing him in that way, as he was introduced that way in The Secret of the Sword, but just not sure now. Then again, the town is controlled by the Horde, so it kind of makes... I don't know. Just seeing him in the cloak again and how he gets found out, and what it's different if he reveals himself, but if someone bumps into him and the cloak falls off his body, it's like, it's a little weird. Nice to see a lackey actually do some good in capturing Bo, meaning Mantana.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love Arrow taking off as soon as She-Ra gives instructions with Cowl barely hanging on. I love that scene. Thankfully, She-Ra only pushed the rock instead of trying to be He-Man and grunt pushing it into the air.
Yeah.
What about you? What'd you like about this one?
I really just had one, and that was Mantena getting the best of... I wrote it down as Mantena 1, Bo 0.
Yeah.
Because I like the fact that he got the upper hand on him, and that's something you don't see a lot in these types of shows, so I thought that was a good angle. So, yeah, that was my favorite part of the episode.
For me, you know, I'll say this, and this will probably come true. Bo slowly, and this is just a character trait I remember. This isn't me, as I've already said, don't remember shit about the episodes, but I just remember constantly every episode Bo being turned into the Daphne Blake of the series and being the damsel in distress, because they wanted to promote girl power and all that.
Yeah.
So, Fright Zone time?
Yeah. Definitely. First,
damn kids.
Yeah, first and foremost, we have to talk about the kids. Our first kids episode. God bless it.
Damn kids, do not leave your father's axe alone.
No, they... Oh. No.
What?
No. The
what?
Kids are a Fright Zone moment because they're portrayed terribly and they're annoying and they're kids. They do not get to be blamed for this axe thing, because...
No, they get to be blamed for leaving it
No,
there.
They don't even get to be blamed for that, because who in God's green earth, when your child and child's friend...
Oh, I see.
Come up to you and say, hey, can we use this axe and go cut some stuff to help you out? What adult says yes? What adult says yes just to... And no. It gets worse. Because his words were not, yes, go ahead, but be very careful, be safe. It's a dangerous weapon. It's sharp. Be careful. His words were, go ahead, but take care of my axe because it's important to me. He was more concerned about taking care of the axe than the kids taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of dude is this? Like, first, you're giving them permission to go play with an axe. And second, your word of caution is not be safe. It's don't fuck my axe up. So that was a bad moment. And lastly, outside of that, which is the only thing that got me interested in this episode at all, was this episode with all capital letters and a few exclamation points is boring.
I got two other ones here. Right. First of all, are we to assume that because this is Filmation, it's the same animation team that was on He-Man?
I assume so.
Okay. Anybody listening, anybody, you know, my buddy James Etok or James Sawyer or Pixel Dan Erdley, anybody that's a He-Man historian, whatever you want to call yourselves, I'm not trying to insult you guys, but anyone who's a more...
Why would that be an insult?
I don't know, whatever. Well, because some... Whatever, anyway. Anyone that's a Filmation historian, let us know if the same animation team was on He-Man and She-Ra, because are you friggin' kidding me? They get the axe and they're carrying it. It looks fine. They set it down. It looks like it, just like Cowl. It looks like it, the animation on it when they set it down and when the Twiggets go to pick it up. When the Twiggets pick it up, the damn thing looks like the head of it has gained 200 pounds. The way it's drawn and designed, it doesn't look like the same damn axe that it was when the father gave it to them. Okay, here's the other thing about She-Ra and her powers and all that stuff that I was mentioning earlier. So Adam only really changed into He-Man when he was really needed. Yet Adora changes into She-Ra when she needs to have a search party. Interesting overuse of power, ? I mean, don't get me wrong. I love seeing her change into She-Ra and change back and all that stuff. But I noticed in this episode that she just changed into She-Ra just to go search for somebody. Whereas normally, at least if he's with Man-at-Arms and Teela, Prince Adam would go searching. And then if something happens on the search, like nothing happened when she went to look. She just went and became She-Ra. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. What was the PSA for this one?
I honestly don't remember what it was on this one. It was something to do with telling lies and, you know, not trying to avoid the truth by making up something to go get your friends killed.
Yeah, something like that. Or ask permission to use my whatever.
Don't let your kids play with axes because bad things
happen. Yeah, that's
what it should have been.
Yeah, that's what it should have been. All right, we're going to get to the awards after this.
The axe! Where is it?
Oh, no! I left it right here. What happened to it?
Father's going to be really mad.
He'll think we aren't responsible.
Yeah.
I got it. Well, tell him it was stolen.
Stolen?
Yeah, we can say we were working in the woods and a thief came up and stole the axe.
Stolen? Yeah, by a man. A man in a purple cloak. And remember to look really scared when we tell him.
Right, let's go.
It is awards time. Got any horde bats?
I do have one horde bat to give out for the missing axe, if it's not clear based on our previous discussion that we had, and that would be, of course, for Mark, the dad of the kids, because again, how can you let your kids go off and play with an axe and all you're worried about is the damn axe? So you can have a horde bat pinned right to your shirt.
Yeah, I agree with that, but those damn kids. Oh, God. They each get one. Oh, my God.
All right.
Not as annoying as Ed Weiner or Cousin Jeremy or any of that, but they were still annoying as all crap. Any swords of protection to hand out?
Yeah, I do have one protection sword to give away, and that would be two Mantenna. I believe that he deserves one because, as I was keeping score, it was Mantenna 1, Bo 0. So just for getting the upper hand on one of the Rebellion members and capturing him, I mean, at least he succeeded in one thing, and we usually do not see board members or, you know, back to evil Eternia, warriors, yeah. the evil warriors. You don't usually see them actually do something successful. So I got to give a protection sword to Mantenna.
See, here's the thing about the evil horde versus the evil warriors. While they are somewhat incompetent when it comes to Mantenna at times, and Leech and Grizzlor, while they're all somewhat very incompetent, at least the members of the horde can at least, because they already rule the planet.
Right.
They already control the entire friggin' planet of Etheria, so it's not like, you know, it's not like on Eternia where Skeletor is still trying to gain control. So, I mean, a screw up every now and then I can kind of see, but yeah, you're right. I'll also give a sort of protection to Mantenna. All right.
As for Crystal Castles awarded to this episode, I'm sorry, but I gotta go down from where we have been in previous episodes and give this one only a 2 out of 5 because it's just like we said, first kid episode with the annoying kids. We have a dad that clearly is not taking care of his children. I just found the entire episode just overall boring. And there wasn't just much to excite me or get me interested in. I was kind of just like watching it and just counting the time down until the episode was over. So 2 out of 5 for me. What about you, sir?
It only gets a 0.5 for Mantenna. It only gets a 0.5 for how awesome Mantenna was. The rest of the episode sucked.
All right. So not a big fan of that episode, huh?
If it wasn't for Mantenna, this episode would get a 0.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. We are going to move on to the final episode of the night, Prisoners of Beast Island. Wait, didn't we already free all them? Anyway, we'll be back in a moment.
The Horde? Coming here? Oh.
Hordak will never be satisfied until he's conquered all Etheria.
Okay. I'll just be moving right along now.
We need you, Sorrowful. One side of you, and the Horde will turn and run again.
You really think so?
I'm sure of it.
No matter what happens, Sorrowful, I'll be here to protect you.
Whatever that means.
Catra, Leech, and Rattlor have entered Bluestone, and will be here within minutes.
Everyone, prepare for attack!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Attention, everyone. Hide throughout the village. Don't show your faces until I give the order to attack.
Finally up today is episode 9 of She-Ra, Princess of Power, Prisoners of Beast Island. Take it away.
Prisoners of Beast Island aired September 19th, 1985, written by Michael Yitvich. I don't know how to say his name. The Horde is attacking Castle Mysticore. Bo convinces Sorrowful the dragon to venture out of the castle to scare off the Horde attackers. When Catra realizes how cowardly Sorrowful really is, she captures him and brings him to Beast Island. For the Horde members, we have Hordak, Catra, Leech, and Grizzlor. And for the members of the Rebellion, of course, we have Princess Adora / She-Ra, Castaspella, Bo, Madam Raz, and Cowl. As far as other characters, it's just basically Sorrowful the Dragon. So, our first look at a few things here, including Sorrowful the Dragon. What did you think about this? First of all, just the idea of this new area that we haven't seen before, Mysticore, which obviously brings in Castaspella as the queen of Mysticore, and just kind of that element of another area, and then involving the whole dragons. We had a lot of dragons in Eternia, We had a lot of episodes, probably a dozen or so episodes that had to deal with dragons, some of them good, some of them bad. This is our first experience with a dragon in Etheria. So what did you think about the setup for Prisoners of Beast Island?
I think it's out of order.
It is out of order. We only know that because we've already watched the episodes for our next podcast. But there's definitely, when we get to our next episode, we're going to have some comments on the ordering of how they decided to air these.
Because I'm like, wait a second,
this episode makes a lot more sense once you watch episode 11.
Yeah, you watch the laughing dragon first, then watch this
one. This is how, man. There is like a million different sites out there that have a million different dates and million different production codes and which ones were produced first, which ones were aired first, etc., etc., etc. But the most reliable ones that I found say that this aired before The Laughing Dragon, which makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. And according to the DVD set, it also is listed before this. So whether it was going by air date or production date, they're saying that this is the first episode of this too. And there's no way this is the first produced episode as far as made. It might have been the first aired one, and it's listed first in all the DVD orders. It just makes no sense. But what did you think about the whole idea of this Castle Mysticore, Castispella?
I like Mysticore. I think it's kind of awesome. I think it's, you know, I wasn't expecting, like, okay, the Great Rebellion, you know, as I mentioned, I think it was last episode, or it might have been even earlier in this podcast, I don't remember, you know, with the beginning of The Secret of the Sword, they basically said, Glimmer says in that, oh, welcome to the Great Rebellion. And Cringer's like, Great Rebellion? There's nobody. He doesn't say there's nobody here, but, you know, and then Kyle's like, oh, well, it's very small. We're just starting, whatever else. So I wasn't expecting to meet someone, because I know we can't help but compare them, but in He-Man, you had characters popping out of the woodwork. In like first four episodes, we saw a whole bunch of different characters first four episodes, and I just wasn't expecting to see any of what we know as the Great Rebellion characters, like Castispella and Frosta and all that. Wasn't expecting to see them so early after Secret of the Sword, but I like it. I think it's cool.
Yeah, because up to this point, most of the characters we've seen appeared in the five part. Mm-hmm. Introduction to this, so you know, mm-hmm. even though we haven't mentioned it like the first time we see it in the episode, because we've seen them before, so you know, things like Leech and Mantenna and Glimmer and Shadow Weaver and Scorpia and Catra, we've seen all of these characters in that five part intro, so this is really one of the first times we've had a new character show up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like the idea of Castispella. I have some good and bad about her that we'll get to later, but you know, obviously in this type of world, you're going to have dragons. So I guess it's good for an introduction to the dragon, to this other area. So it's not just the Fright Zone and the Whispering Woods. You know, we have mm-hmm. these other areas, whether it be this castle or this area of Mysticore or whatever else we come across. So it just adds to the size of this world and what all it encompasses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an entire planet. Right. I mean, there's no way in hell Etheria is one half Whispering Woods, one half Fright Zone.
Right. So it's good to kind of see some of what else. It's just good to see what else it consists of. What other areas are we going to come into connection with, and which ones are going to come up multiple times throughout the series or stuff like that. So I have no problem with the setup for this.
Yeah, and we'll see next week how actually big or small the Whispering Woods is.
Yeah, some cases so really no big way. And some cases really small.
Yeah. Shall we get to the Whispering
Woods? We're talking about them. We might as well get over there.
The gate won't hold him much longer. Are you ready, Sorrowful?
Oh, ready as I'll ever be.
Ow! All beams on the gateway. Full power!
Hello, Horde.
Oh, a dragon!
Maybe this is time for a quick retreat.
Tell them they haven't got a chance.
Haven't got a chance, Horde.
If they don't turn around right now, you'll breathe flame on them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You just go home now, or I'll have to breathe fire all over you.
That dragon is no threat. Ow! Hordesman, attack! Here's some magic that will stop those robots. Ah, you'll have to do better than that. All takes. Wow! Bridge the gap!
Stand back, everybody. Sword to Ice Maker! Now they're frozen in their tracks.
All right, we have entered the Whispering Woods.
Don't sound so excited.
Hey. A 2-for-1 shot. Good job, Cowl. She-Ra makes a whirlpool. Now, that was a fun swimming lesson.
Yeah.
I like how Sorrowful slowly gets courage, and then it immediately gets taken away from him next time. But anyway, Sorrowful standing up to Catra. Now, that was awesome. And he even was going to take her over his knee. That was hilarious. That was a hilarious line. What do you got?
I only have one note. And I didn't list him as a Horde member in the beginning because he's not listed on a lot of sites as appearing in this episode. But that was Rattler, right?
I don't know.
I mean, Rattler is in this episode with the leech. I am about 100% sure of that. So I think there's some mistypings on some websites as far as who appears in this episode, because I wrote it down immediately. This is one of the few toys, not few, I had more than a few toys, but this is one of the toys that I had growing up that I think mistakenly assumed appeared in He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he appears in She-Ra, and he's kind of played as a somewhat of an idiot, which I don't remember because his toy is actually really kind of intimidating looking and badass, so he doesn't kind of fit that. But I put Rattler with an exclamation point as my only Whispering Woods moment because I was super excited to see my toy show up in the cartoon. I didn't get to see him in He-Man. Now he shows up, so I was all about that. What about Fright Zone moments for you?
Yeah, Fright Zone moments. It's going to start a recurring theme in this podcast, and we're going to have to keep count. So, as of right now, we have one Sword to Ice Maker. What the fuck?
Just literally, that was my first, under Fright Zone moments, that's my first line, says Sword to Ice Maker.
Just the first in a series of wacky things the Sword of Protection can turn into.
I hate
so,
that.
So far, we're at one.
I hate it.
Now, The big, okay, now I'm not trying to spoil your viewing. I'm not trying to jump ahead or anything else, but I do remember the biggest one that I absolutely hate is during Horde Prime Takes a Holiday, because they're in space and it should not work what she does with the damn
sword. Why have you seen that episode already?
Huh?
Why have you already watched that episode?
Horde Prime Takes a Holiday? It was on TV a couple of years ago.
Oh, bastard. Anyways.
What? It was on. We were in the middle of He-Man back then. Like, I'm going to. Whatever.
Sword to Ice Maker was dumb.
Yeah. Cowl is so goddamn negative and annoying in this episode. Oh my god. Sorrowful rolls up his sleeves. He doesn't have sleeves.
Right.
I just. It just makes me facepalm people. It really, really does. Like, I know it's that whole animation thing of, hey, I've got the courage now. I've got the power. You have no sleeves. That is your skin. There's not more muscular skin under the flabbiness of your other anyway, but yeah. What about you?
Obviously, the sword to the ice maker is my first thing. After that, at one point, She-Ra turns that thing into like a spinning top, which is all fine and dandy. She can do things real fast and powerful, so I can buy that she turned it into a top. But you don't have control over when a top stops spinning. And she just somehow, we're supposed to buy that she can manipulate so that it stops right at the right time to do what it needs to do. And then how did Catcher get out of that so quickly from underneath the top? Because then almost in the next scene, Catra's flying on her ship. How did she get out so fast? And another thing about Catra, why are Catra symbols on the destroyers?
Catra symbols?
Yeah, it's not Hordak and the bat symbol. It's Catra's like eyes, her like mask is like a symbol on the destroyers. And
I did not notice that.
They go crazy with the villainous vehicles in this series as far as needing, they all need a symbol of some sort. I don't get it. Bo is an idiot. I mean, I know I could say that on most episodes, but he's an idiot in this episode. And this is an example of apparently an episode that should not be seen as a standalone episode and should not be seen before episode 11. Not just because of the Sorrowful or the area that we're at with Mysticore, but they wrote this episode as if we know who cast a spell it is, because over half or two thirds of this episode goes through, if not more, they might go through the whole episode, and they never identify her. They do not use the word cast a spell or say, you know, what she's in charge of, at least for the first few scenes that she's in. And if you've seen episode 11, you would know that that's who she is, because she's identified as the Queen of Mysticore, etc. But they don't do that in this episode, so it took me a while to figure out who she was. I'm like, I know she's one of the characters that had a figure, and she's a good character. I don't know who what this person's name is, outside of, you know, having to write it in the script that this is Casaspella. So I had a little bit of a problem with that, but that's all I have.
What was the PSA for this one?
It was about being loyal to your friends, and once again, I did not identify where he was in the episodes.
I don't give a crap.
You would never be able to identify him. You're not a good enough spotter. I'm trying to challenge you. But yeah, be loyal to your friends was the PSA.
Here's the thing. We come from He-Man, where either Randor, Adam, He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Orko, Teela, Marlena, Stratos, any of the other good characters in various episodes throughout the entire series give us a PSA. And now in She-Ra, they want to kiddify the PSA and turn it into a friggin' Where's Waldo?
I like it. I think it's a cool, clever thing.
I just can't stand his voice.
I actually like his voice a lot more than some of the characters in the actual TV show. I wish he was a character and some of those other characters weren't, but I don't dislike it at all. I think it's a cool little thing to switch it up instead of just continuously doing the same PSAs that every other cartoon was doing, to add a different spin to it. Give the kids something to look for the episode. Try to increase their, their visual attentiveness and, you know, being able to spot something, play a game with them at the same time, tie it into the PSA and make it a character that the kids are looking for. I think it's cool.
All right, let's get to the hardware after this.
Oh, mighty Hordak, we bring you a rebel prisoner.
This dragon is a friend of She-Ra's and the other rebels.
And they'll surely try to rescue him.
Make sure that you don't lose them when they do. Dragon?
Yes, your awfulness.
Goodbye.
Huh?
Ouch.
I'll never get out of here. Oh, I'll never see my friends again. Oh, never.
It's time to hand out some hardware. You got any horde bats this time around?
Yep. Pin another horde bat on Bo. That's all I got for this episode. He was an idiot.
Next week we can pin them all over his dress.
True.
For me, the sword of change into anything. Ugh, this will be a recurring theme in Cowl, just because. So the sword of protection gets one because it can change into the dumbest things in the world and Cowl. All
right.
What about swords of protection? You got any?
Nope, nobody earned anything in this episode.
Okay, I'm conflicted here now because we've watched, obviously, because we're going to be recording later, the episode 49. So when I first watched this episode, I gave Sorrowful one for getting his courage and standing up to the Horde. But now I'm not so sure, considering...
You can't do that. You gave Sorrowful a protection system. I'm writing it down in the notes. It's concrete. Don't be playing revisionist history.
I'm
here.
Just saying, I just don't know if I can do it anymore.
Nope,
now
it's in the books.
Anyway, ratings, what do you give this one?
I give this one 3 crystal castles out of 5.
Same here. We are going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some other GCRN core and syndicated show ads, and we'll be back after this.
She-Ra looked for the good in him and found it. If you look for the good in people, you'll usually find it, and you might just find a new friend. So look for the good in people. Bye now. See you next time.
It's Showtime Synergy. The latest review podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network is here. So join TFG1 Mike, Nicole Hailstorm, and myself, Lady Wreck, as we will be reviewing all 65 episodes of Joe and the Holograms in a 25-episode-long podcast. You can find Showtime Synergy on iTunes and GeekCastRadio.com. We are the truly outrageous podcast that you want to be listening to.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Atkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good grief.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
Today, Bo lost the race. I felt really bad because he did. But She-Ra told him he did his best, and that's what counts. Win or lose, what counts is doing your best. See you next time.
We are back here on Powers of Grayskull series, Myths of Etheria. Any final thoughts, anything you want to bring up before I close it out?
Just an interesting first set of episodes after the 5-parter. Started off on a high note. Obviously, I gave the first episode a 4, and then we had just kind of a bunch of middling episodes. We had our first kid episode. We had our first dragon episode. Saw our first new good character with Castispella, our first new bad character with Ratlore. So definitely not boring yet. It's very early, so I would hate it if it was boring. But they're throwing a lot of different stuff at us each episode, so it's definitely keeping it interesting. So I definitely have nothing bad to say, even if I did rank one episode a 2 and a 3 and a 3.5. Nothing terrible yet. So I'm interested to see where we go and who we see from here.
Yeah, I'm still interested to see what's going to happen and where the show's going to go and where it's going to take us. And overall, you know, even though we gave these, you know, some low ratings, at least I did for one of them anyway, it's not bad. It because, and we've said this in the previous, in episode 46 and 47, we've said it so much that people are probably tired of hearing us say this, or at least hearing me say this.
Yeah.
All as we knew, all as we remembered, was Secret of the Sword. That's all we remember. So, you know, I mean, I have nothing to... I mean, yeah, sure, we can kind of compare it to He-Man versus, you know, like I did earlier with the Horde members versus the Evil Warriors and how the Horde actually is in charge of the planet. You know, we can do that, but there's nothing really to... There's, ladies and gentlemen, anyone that says to us, oh, you guys are just going off nostalgia. How the hell can we have nostalgia for something that we barely friggin' remember? I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things.
I have no preconceived notion to like or dislike this series. I'm going in completely willing to say either one. If it's crap, I'm going to call it crap. If it's good, I'm going to call it good.
And that's the same way I am. I mean, you know, over the years, I've seen, you know, several episodes here and there. But, I mean, you know, I think out of the entire series, the three episodes that I really remember are Horde Prime Takes a Holiday, Swifty's Baby, and I don't want to say The Glass Shatters because that's a Stone Cold thing. It's the episode where the sword gets cracked. The jewel gets cracked in the sword. But anyway, I forget the title of it off the top of my head. Thank you for listening to Myths of Etheria. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com where you can comment on this and all of our other podcasts. Leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter at geekcastradio is the network Twitter. You can follow at Pow of Grayskull for Powers of Grayskull. I am TFG1 Mike. What is your Twitter?
At Optimus Solo.
What's your other one? Don't you want to pimp that too?
I mean, you can also get a hold of me when we're talking movies at Cinema Geekcast.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradio network. We hope you enjoyed The Mist today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure when we will take a look at the next three episodes, those being The Peril of Whispering Woods, The Laughing Dragon, and King Miro's Journey. Hey, the first crossover. For now, I am TFG1 Mike.
The one and only Optimus Solo.
By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, you all have the power.